Welcome back to another episode of the D-Fly and Dixie podcast featuring ESPN, Big Ten Network, and inside lacrosse analyst Mark Dixon. You know him from TV. I know him from back in the day when we were just two young bucks trying to keep our heads above water as JHU undergrads. As always, I'm your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, let's get it. Dixie, what is up, my good man? Good to be talking with you.
Guess who's back? Back again. D-Fly's back. Tell a friend. Missed you last week.
Yeah, I did.
You missed guys in the off season and missed you last week. Well, good to be with you again, and good to have you back in the saddle.
Thank you very much. You and Matt did a very fine job. I felt like Wally Pipp. You ever know the story, Wally Pipp? That was like the guy that Lou Gehrig filled in for. I was like, I'm never going to get that podcast back.
Yeah.
After Matt Kinnear knocked it out of the park last week. But I was surprised. One thing, you guys, you talked about the concert you were going to go see, but you never mentioned that I am going to see that Hall & Oates concert with you, and we talked about it, and you bought tickets for me. I still owe you the money, by the way. And you never mentioned that I was going to see the Pearl Jam concert with Matt. So I'll be at both of those.
Yeah. First of all, you still owe me money for the ticket, so you're officially not going. As of yet, you're unofficially going.
But I haven't seen the tickets.
All kidding aside, look. We talked. Your schedule didn't permit you to be on the podcast last week, and I know you're. Other than what you share on this podcast, you're a pretty private guy. You like to keep to yourself. I didn't want to broadcast your business out to the masses without your blessing. So, I didn't want all the D-Fly Dixie fans to show up at the Chicken Box in late March at the Pearl Jam concert looking to get a selfie with you. I didn't want people crowding our space on the lawn in late August at Hall & Oates. I didn't want all the charlatans waiting for you and you know, bombarding you with autograph requests. So I figured I'd let the cat out of the bag. You have, and you know, I'm excited to go to Hall & Oates with you in August. That's true.
Well, thanks, Dix. That's very, very kind of
you. Well, my bad. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings by not.
No, you're looking out for me. No, it just seemed that you were talking around it, and I wasn't sure why. Speaking of Guess Who's Back, did you see Eminem on the Oscars?
I didn't, but I heard about it, I heard it was pretty entertaining. I heard it was entertaining, but a number of people. It seemed like, in reading things the next day, I didn't watch the Oscars. I don't think I saw any of the movies that were nominated except for Joker. I saw Joker. I haven't seen The Irishman yet. I will watch that. I have a long flight to the West Coast coming up this month.
You got to you got to get the Netflix DVD sent to you, or the Blu-ray.
No, I don't do that anymore.
You're streaming now?
Streaming only. I was streaming before, but we're using the on-demand feature of to see like current movies or movies that are relatively new. Like Joker, we watched that on demand.
Okay.
Didn't get it via disc from Netflix. So everything we watch on Netflix is streamed. But I haven't seen The Irishman yet. We just got caught up with Schitt's Creek. You ever watch Schitt's Creek?
No, I haven't.
That's a funny show. My wife and I really enjoy that. And I do want to see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But other than that, I don't really have an interest in a lot of those. Maybe 1917. And I guess I should check out Parasite just because it won Best Picture and people say, but it's all subtitles.
But it also won Best Original Screenplay. And I think that's what people like the most, is that it was a new story. In an age where everything is recycled in Hollywood, that it was a new story, like a really creative, inventive watch.
Almost like the movie Get Out, I would imagine.
So I did see The Irishman and I did see 1917, and they were both great movies. And that's really all I can speak of about that. I didn't see The Joker yet. I would like to see that. It just seems pretty
good. Joker is good. That is a good movie. That's a dark movie, but it's really, really good. I think one of the things that, I don't want to say turned me off, but I kind of raised an eyebrow. I guess it was Monday of this week, I guess I was looking at the winners of the Oscars and some of the reaction, and it seems like everybody uses Billie Eilish as a barometer of what's cool and what's not cool. So I guess Maya Rudolph and Kristen Wiig did some type of comedy bit on the Oscars, which I actually watched and I didn't think it was that funny, but Billie Eilish kind of, I don't know, made a face when they were performing or doing whatever. And then I guess when Eminem was out, she doesn't know who Eminem is or isn't familiar with his music or something.
How do you know who he is?
But, like, since when does Billie Eilish or any become a barometer of, like, what's cool, what's good, what's... I don't know. So
I agree with you.
That seems a little silly to me.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I would say most of America cannot name a song that she sings. So how cool can she be?
Yeah, and I heard she was on the Howard Stern show, and I guess she writes a lot of music with her brother. This was back in 2019, and I just didn't get it. Like, Howard was fawning all over her, and I'm just like, it's just not my thing. It's not my cup of tea. It's not the type of music that I enjoy listening to. But she's popular, and she's very talented, obviously, a real young artist and making her way in the game. But I did not watch the Oscars. I did, and I didn't watch the Golden Globes either, but I did watch Ricky Gervais's opening monologue probably like 5 or 6 times, because I thought that was just absolutely hysterical.
It was good.
The way he lambasted and tongue-lashed the Hollywood elite that was in the room. But anyway, it's how do we get to talking about the Oscars?
I was talking about Eminem.
I don't remember how that came up.
You started
about
saying
Eminem. Okay.
Back, and I was saying how great his performance was. Yeah. Did Lose Yourself. It was fantastic. But, okay, Dix, it's time to talk some lacrosse. Let's get it. All right.
Yeah, let's.
First segment of the week. I want to know what the best thing you saw last week was.
Best thing?
Best thing you saw last week, in officially week one of the college lacrosse season.
Yeah.
Now, I know what it was for me. It was seeing Mark Dixon doing a game at Homewood Field with Quint. That was pretty...
Well, thank you.
That was pretty nice.
That actually is high up on the list. You know, being back on television and being back in the broadcast chair covering games, you know, that was a game that was competitive after a hot Hopkins start, and then Hopkins pulled away late. I liked the physical play in that game, and I liked how it appears that the referees got more right than wrong in terms of the big hits that were in that game. I'll tell you the thing I liked the most about last weekend. I liked the fact that on Sunday morning, when I opened up my iPad and I went to ESPN Plus, I could watch Loyola Virginia, I could watch Maryland Richmond, I could watch High Point Duke. That's what I like about week one, and that's going to be consistent throughout the season. The ESPN Plus app is, or the ESPN app, I'm not quite sure what it is, but ESPN Plus is awesome. I mean, it's really, really fantastic. Our good friend, Todd Cavallaro, head coach of Franklin and Marshall, his game with Lynchburg this weekend is being streamed on ESPN3. He shot me a text last night asking if I was doing the game, and I had not been contacted about that contest. But
when is
F&M
that game?
Lynchburg, I think it's on Saturday, but I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure it's on Saturday, and I don't know what time.
But what's great is even if you miss it might still be in the feed, in the queue, and you can watch it later.
It will be. It'll go from the live and upcoming queue to the on-demand queue. So, you know, ESPN app, the BTN Plus app, as we get our Big Ten Network coverage started in the next couple of weeks, that'll be huge. But, like, that was really a great thing for me in week one, being able to watch those games in their entirety when I hadn't been able to watch them live because I was working on Saturday.
Well, I agree with you. I will be watching that F&M Lynchburg game now that you mention it. I'll be keeping an eye out for that. But what was fascinating is I was not working on Saturday, and I was able to be home watching several games through the ESPN app. And one of the best things I saw, besides Hopkins getting their win and you calling that game, was being able to flip through the Richmond-Maryland game and seeing the score in that and being like, whoa, Richmond's beating Maryland 11-6 in the third quarter. And then seeing the Duke-High Point game. But the single best thing I saw, I flipped to the Furman-Hampton game, also on ESPN Plus streaming, and there's snow everywhere. And I was bewildered. I was like, I don't understand. Are they playing at a neutral site? There's no way that this is, I know it's not snowing in Virginia, where Hampton is, and it can't possibly be snowing that much in South Carolina, where Furman is, right? Right? And sure enough, it was definitely in Furman.
Yeah.
I had to go on InsideLacrosse.com and find out where that game was being played, because I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw that much snow on the ground. And I was like, why would they move it to a place where it would be snowing? Like, why would those two teams who are south of the Mason-Dixon line considerably, move to a neutral site to play a game that where there could be snow like that. And I was baffled. So climate change is real, bro. It was shocking.
Yeah, well, depends on who you talk to, because as they were battling the snow, we had pretty mild temperatures. It was actually more on the chilly side, but Matt and I were talking about this last week. It's been an incredibly mild winter in the mid-Atlantic so far. And I think things are supposed to get very cold this weekend. I know in the state of Maryland and along the eastern seaboard, I think the high might be 35 on Saturday, which is a drastic drop in temperature, not just for this winter as a whole, but if you look at the weather in the Baltimore area, at least this week, it's been 50-50. We've had rain, but it's been mild. And then I think Friday and Saturday, it dips down into the 30s. And then guess what? By Sunday, back in the 50s. It's a good old Punxsutawney Phil. Maybe that guy's right. Didn't see his shadow, so early spring, have to hope for it. But, yeah, that was pretty crazy. And it was like, and they didn't use an orange ball or a colored ball, if I'm not mistaken, right? They were still using a white ball.
I don't remember seeing a colored ball.
I don't remember either. And either no one had colored lacrosse balls to use, or the rule is if a coach once says, you know, we want to use colored balls, both coaches have to agree to that. I bring that up because Loyola Holy Cross a couple years ago, the game was being played at Loyola.
Yeah.
And I think it was Loyola, but I'm not sure. I think Loyola wanted to use colored balls, and the coaching staff for Holy Cross said no. And Holy Cross won that game, if I'm not mistaken.
They did.
A major upset.
Big upset.
At the time. But here's a trick. If you want a game, at the very least, to use colored lacrosse balls, or even if you want the game to end, all a goalie has to say to a referee is, I can't see. If a goalie tells a referee that he can't see, game is over. Because that's a safety issue. Becomes a safety issue. So just something to stock away if the Flins are getting beat considerably in a lacrosse game and it starts to snow, just so you can't see.
So the game was 19-1 when I turned it on, probably late in the game. Uh-huh. And why didn't the goalie say it? I mean, obviously he was having trouble seeing the ball. It was 19-1. He should have just said that anyway. No matter what, even if it wasn't
Because
they're
competing. Yeah. Yeah, they're competing.
I'm joking.
You know, you don't want to give up and all that good stuff. I'm not saying that, you know, you're going to get a forfeit win or the game is declared a no contest or anything like that. The game, I guess, I've never been in that situation as an official, nor have I ever seen it take place. So I don't know how that would be adjudicated if it was middle of the first quarter and it's a tie game. I would guess the game might have to be played at a later date, but I don't know. But yeah, that was wild weather. That was crazy. Where was that game played again? That wasn't at Furman.
It was at Furman.
It was at Furman. So it's in South Carolina.
Correct.
Good gravy. All right.
Yeah, I didn't even know it was snowing there. Hey, I have a question for you. So the mild winter that we've had here, and obviously teams starting, you know, much earlier than say when you played 20 years ago or so. How much more? Do you feel like that's helped the teams advance their preparation and maybe some of the things they could put in and just the overall health of a team because the weather has been better for the most part of their preseason? And like what percentage do you think that puts them ahead?
I'm not good at percentages, you know. It's like when you're watching Family Feud and the Fast Money round comes on and they're like, on a scale of 1 to 10, how many people feel that they're really secure? You're like, come on, ask a real question.
Nobody ever gets those right.
Name a word that rhymes with cold. Like, that's easier. That's easy to get. I don't know about percentage-wise, but I do think that the milder temperatures and the better weather help for the development of teams because, you know, their hands aren't frozen. They can communicate better because maybe it's not as windy. Their lips can move because they're not frozen from being cold. And I do believe it, I don't know if there's a correlation to this season and injuries or not. I mean, we've already had one big-time player from a big-time program, Joe Robertson, go down with an ACL. He'll miss the season. We coming into their game on Saturday, Towson was incredibly banged up with particularly on the offensive end of the field. So I don't know if it really lends itself to have a healthier preseason, but I think the chances might be greater because maybe you don't have as many pulled muscle, tweaked muscles, you know, because it is a little bit warmer and your body can get warmer and stay warmer longer. Maybe the challenge might be for when it's been 50, 55 degrees, relatively mild, and then you have to play in 35 degree weather. Let's look at Penn Maryland this weekend. Let's look at Hopkins Loyola. You know, these teams have been practicing and will be practicing in weather that is 50 degrees plus this week. And then Friday, they'll probably get a good dose of chilly, if not downright cold weather. Then Saturday's going to be the coldest day, not only of the week, but probably the coldest day of the year of 2020 so far. So I think that's an adjustment and something they're going to have to get used to. But I do think the warmer weather helps with development. Your stick can be better. You don't maybe have to worry about using your third stick because you don't want to break your number one because it's so cold. And things of that nature. So maybe, you know, there might be something to it.
Yeah, there's a lot to think about there. And it's a good segue into a spectacular slate of games this week, Dix. Let's start with that first game you mentioned. Number 6 Penn will play their season opener at number 4 Maryland, who's 2-0, at noon on Saturday. What do you expect from this game?
This is a great early season contest. Two top 7 teams going at it. Penn made it to the quarterfinals a year ago, tough loss to Yale. Maryland, of course, lost in the quarterfinals to Virginia. Big difference when I look at this game is Maryland's 2-0. They got two games under their belt. Penn, this is their first game because the Ivies typically start later than the rest of the college lacrosse landscape. So a couple things there. One, Penn has two games worth of film on Maryland, and Maryland doesn't have anything on Penn. And also Maryland's got their legs underneath of them a little bit. They've got 120 minutes of game action, and they've played against two quality opponents in High Point and Richmond in getting ready for this game. So they kind of know what they have, and they're down the path further of figuring out who they are and what they can be than Penn is. But that doesn't, you know, I think that's where the advantages and disadvantages end. Penn is a team that returns a lot of talent. They're going to be very good on the offensive end. They will have a new goalie replacing Reed Junkin. They do have Simon Mathias has graduated, so who steps up and really takes command from a leadership position on the offensive end of the field. But this will be a really good game. I think you have to give the advantage to Maryland for some of the reasons I already mentioned. And when you look at the Terrapins, they went on the road last week. They're down by 5 goals at one point to Richmond. They battled back. Kind of baffling that Richmond didn't use a timeout in overtime to save possession, in both overtimes, as a matter of fact. Still scratching my head over that one. But credit Maryland. They came back, won that game. Logan Wisnowskis looks really strong. Jack Brennan is a secondary player that we really didn't know a whole lot about. Young player who's made an impact so far on that team. So it should be a really, really good contest.
Yeah, generally, I see that when a team hasn't played versus a team that has a couple games under their belt, the team that has some experience on the season tends to be better in the specialty situations, so man up, man down, and other situations like that, you'll see less errors there than a team that's playing their first game. All right, moving on. Next big game of the week, there's really 5 top 20 matchups. Number 20, Rutgers, 2-0 on the season, at number 14, Army, who's also 2-0 and has looked very impressive in their first two wins. That game will be at noon.
Wow. When you look at Army, 17-4 victory this past weekend over UMass. That is something that jumps out at you right away. That's a series that has been really defined by one-goal games over the last few years and a really kind of a good early season barometer of where these teams may end up come the month of May. But this is an Army team that can score goals in bunches and they're very talented offensively. They lost a lot on the defensive end, so they're starting some new pieces there. But to host the Minutemen and to swamp them 17-4, and then 2 days later, they have New Jersey Institute of Technology, and they beat them 19-1, you would think, yeah, sure, okay, NJIT, not as talented as UMass, but for the Black Knights to beat the Minutemen like that is serving notice. And they're going to host a Rutgers team that I think Rutgers is going to surprise a number of teams this year. They're a team that they're just on the cusp every season of making it to the NCAA tournament. They just can't beat Maryland. You know, that's like their golden goose, their Moby Dick, if you will. But this is a team that likes to run. They like to push the pace. They've got a very talented attack unit. Kieran Mullins, Charlon Beattie, Ryan Gallagher's off to a great start. They also have a new goaltender. And much like that Army-UMass game, Rutgers-Army is a good early season indicator of how these team seasons are going to go. So I think it's going to be a very good game. It has a potential to be incredibly high scoring, and it should be very, very entertaining.
The next top 20 matchup, number 18, Lehigh, 1-0 after 16-11 win over Utah, will travel down to Charlottesville to take on the defending champs, number 2 ranked Virginia, at 1 o'clock.
Lehigh is a team that I have ranked higher than most people probably do in the Inside the Cross media poll. I've got them 11 or 12. Most people, I think, have them at the bottom of the top 20. I think Lehigh is a team that you always try to pick that preseason team that's ranked too low. And last week, Matt Kadir identified his as Richmond. Mine is Lehigh, and I just think that the Mountain Hawks are a very good team. They're going to face off really, really well. They get back Andrew Pettit from a knee injury. He's a huge shot in the arm. Tommy Schelling had 7 goals against Lehigh, and he's a very good player. You know, it's interesting. You look at Loyola as being the kingpin of the Patriot, and we're going to talk about the Greyhounds, I'm sure, in a few minutes. And I think that they're very, very good. But two of the most improved teams in the country this season could be Army and Lehigh when it's all said and done. And Lehigh gave Virginia everything they could handle a year ago down in Charlottesville. They get another opportunity to take on the defending national champions, who are absolutely loaded. Now, this Virginia team is so talented. They return virtually everyone, minus Ryan Conrad, David Smith in the midfield. Those are two big losses. But you get back the bulk of your scoring, you get back the bulk of your defense, and you get back your goaltender, who is playing the best lacrosse of his life. He had 18 saves against Loyola on this past Saturday. He had 10 in the first quarter. He was a difference in that game, whereas the year before against Loyola, he was a little bit of a liability. This year, he was an asset and helped them win that game. If I'm Virginia, you have to clean up the fouls. I thought Loyola left some opportunities on the table with the missed man-up chances. You can't foul that much if you're Virginia and expect to win each and every week. This game could be the dog of the week. This could be the dog of the week in terms of maybe Lehigh can go in there and steal one. But it's a little different this year. Virginia, at this time last season, was trying to figure themselves out, find out who they are. They knew who they are. They knew who they are now. And this is a great early season matchup. I know, Dan, I know we were joking when we were talking about the lineup of games we wanted to cover. You're like, man, there's like 7 top 20 matchups this week. Like, there always is. There's only 75 teams. So chances are you're going to get a really good top 20 matchup, and this just happens to be one of them.
One of the other great matchups this week, number 13, Duke, will travel west to play number 9, Denver, matchup of two of the all-time great coaches in college lacrosse. That game will be at 2 o'clock. Denver looked really good in their win over Air Force last week.
They did, and they've got some talented freshmen that have burst onto the scene. I say burst onto the scene because a lot of times, other than the face-off kid for Denver, their recruits, at least in this season, Stahakis is his name?
Alex Stahakis, yeah, from Culver.
Yeah. Culver Academy, fantastic. He's on the he made the U19 team, if I'm not mistaken.
He did.
Correct?
He did.
Yeah. So, you know, you have Brett Booz, who's a good face-off guy and took over the reins from Trevor Baptiste a year ago, and now you have a second really good face-off guy. But, you know, Denver's a team that slid last year. They didn't make the NCAA tournament. They're in prime position this year to not only compete for a Big East championship, but to get back into the NCAA tournament and try to get back to championship weekend. And they're playing against a Duke team. And let's give a lot of credit to Denver, because Air Force was coming off that emotional, hard-fought win on the road against Duke, and the Pioneers just went into Colorado Springs and really just from whistle to whistle controlled and handled that game. And now we're looking at a Duke team. I believe this game is at Denver, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Is it out west?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Duke has to fly out. And this is a Duke team that made some great strides last week from the opening season loss to Air Force. But after the game, and when I looked at the stats a little closer, they won 76% of their faceoffs. I think they were 90-something percent on clears. You know, they just didn't make the plays that Air Force made, and they seemed to be lacking some offensive leadership late in that game. But they figured some things out on the road against High Point in an environment that I thought High Point was really set up for the Panthers to take an opportunity to knock off Duke at home. A lot of support, a lot of energy in High Point last weekend. But Duke went in, handled things nicely. John Donowski made some adjustments. So this is always a high-profile game for Denver, because when Denver plays the Carolinas and when they play the Dukes and they play the Notre Dames, like, they're on everybody's radar. And then they kind of go off the radar when they get into their conference play. And then they reemerge for the Big East tournament and the NCAA tournament. This is an opportunity for Denver to really continue to propel themselves up the pole. And this is a good barometer. It's only really game three, week two, week three, depending upon how you look at it for Duke. But this could be a good litmus test of how much they have corrected from their first game against Air Force.
Our fifth and final matchup of top 20 teams will be in Baltimore, when number 11 Hopkins, coming off a win over Towson, travels to Loyola to play the 16th ranked Greyhounds at 3:30 in a big game for both teams.
It's a Charles Street rivalry that's been controlled by Loyola over the last few years, including a win a season ago at Homewood Field. This is and Hopkins, wow, great start for the Blue Jays, 15-7 drubbing of the Towson Tigers. I don't think the season could have started any better for Johns Hopkins. You're minus Joey Epstein. You get a career game out of Cole Williams. You get a great game out of Connor DeSimone. You get some new faces. Garrett Degnan stepped up with some big plays. Owen Murphy, a freshman, made a great debut. You dominated the faceoffs. You got a good defensive performance. And your goalie, who's a huge question mark coming into the season, plays fantastic. And, oh, by the way, you also out-bullied Towson with some big physical hits. So, perfect, as close to perfect as a season opener as you can get for Johns Hopkins. How good are the Blue Jays? I think this will be a big test. Loyola's going to face off a lot better than Towson did. Loyola's going to have more offensive continuity and more offensive firepower than Towson did. And defensively, they are going to be more disciplined and locked down than Towson was. So this is a totally different animal that Johns Hopkins is taking on. And it should be a great game. It's going to be bone cold at Wrigley, but it should be still a very spirited crowd, tremendous atmosphere, and two teams that are a walk away from one another in terms of their proximity. So in terms of early season matchups and rivalry and what it means to each school, it doesn't get much better than Loyola Johns Hopkins.
Do you expect to see a lot of zone from Loyola this Saturday?
They were without Matt Hughes and Jack Raley, two starting defenders. And, of course, Hughes tore his knee up last year, and probably have to assume that hasn't been given the green light or they haven't felt comfortable putting him in a game situation. Loyola does have the ability to cover Hopkins if fully healthy and fully stocked. But I think you saw what Towson did against Hopkins, and they did struggle against their zone for a good bit of the early second quarter, all the way through halftime. Hopkins seemed to figure it out by the middle of the third quarter. So you could see some zone. This is a Loyola team. It does have a new goaltender. Sam Schaefer took over the pipe for Jacob Stover. The injuries on defense, so you could. I don't know if it's going to be a steady diet, but I'm sure defensive coordinator Mac Duan is going to mix and match his looks that he throws at the Blue Jays.
It'll certainly be a great game on Saturday, and I'm excited to watch that one. So, Dix, it's time for the popular give and go segment. And here's how it works for the listeners at home. Dix is very good as a broadcaster. He's good on his feet. So I'll give him a topic or ask him a question each week. He formulates his answer. He doesn't know the question in advance. And then I give my answer while he sort of thinks about it. And then we hear his response to it. So Dix, here's the question for this week. Usually we focus on food, holidays, music, pop culture things. But I thought, since it's so early in the season, we start with something more lacrosse related. So what are you looking forward to seeing this season?
Seriously? Yeah. All right.
Okay. What are you looking forward to seeing this season? Like, what are some of the storylines that you're going to be following? And I'll start with mine, and feel free to chime in at any time. So,
one thing I'm looking forward to is doing more fun give and go topics than this one. But go ahead.
Well, like, we've covered a lot. And I could have given you Valentine's Day. I could have given you, music one.
Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
It's today.
I hope you took care of Mrs. Dixon.
What are you doing with Miss Flynn? That's what all of our listeners want to know.
Yeah, well, I could tell you right on this podcast because I know she won't be listening, so it won't be any surprise to her. But here's some of the storylines that I'm looking for. Of course, I'll be following the action in the top leagues like the Big Ten and the ACC. Obviously Hopkins, my favorite team in the Big Ten. Lots of games on TV that you'll be doing. Coverage of the ACC and Big Ten. They get a lot of media coverage. But one of the leagues that I've really become fond of following, and it's very exciting to watch them play, not only because I know a lot of the kids that play through the Inside Lacrosse events and then working them over the years through some staff contacts, but is the SoCon. I really have enjoyed watching the SoCon, especially High Point last year with their run beating Duke and Virginia, and then not getting an NCAA tournament berth, even though they put up an outstanding regular season, but they didn't get their automatic bid through the tournament. Richmond's off to a really fine start this year, as well as Air Force. Jacksonville is always interesting, and a lot of the other teams in the league are always fun to watch. So that is a league that I look forward to watching and seeing if they can make the next step nationally with out-of-conference wins, I guess is the way to look at it. Number two.
Go ahead. SoCon, I couldn't agree more. If the SoCon Lacrosse League was a stock, I'd buy it. So I like it.
Second one is the shot clock rule and the updated dive rule. I'm interested to see how teams continue to evolve their game plans and their offensive and defensive strategies around those rules as they make the sport more interesting for the fan to watch at home. I want to see if teams sort of adapt to the rules or whether they try to bend the rules in their favor and take advantage of them. And that's always sort of the game within the game. And finally, the third one is I want to see some of these young programs, you know, up to 75 teams in Division I lacrosse now. Cleveland State and Hampton, fairly new programs, but with their second sort of generation of coaches taking over those two programs, see how those continue to evolve. St. Bonaventure in Utah, just getting started, how their growth from in year one, year two, and then Merrimack and LIU moving from Division II to Division I. I'm always interested to see those new programs. It gives me hope that more and more colleges will make the move and start Division I lacrosse programs.
Good list. For me, I the goal mouth, what impact is that going to have on games this season? And much like the dive last year, will a dive decide a game, whether called correctly or incorrectly? How is it going to be adjudicated? Now we have to deal with the goal mouth and the complexities of understanding as coaches and players the interpretation by officials, the protection health of goalies. I think the goal mouth is going to be a big storyline as we chug through the 2020 season. In terms of conferences, I'm interested in the Ivies. And in particular, can Penn or someone else dethrone Yale? And what I look at for Yale in particular is how do the two new assistant coaches mesh and blend in with Andy Shea and the players? You lose Andrew Stimmel, who's now at Marquette. You lose Andrew Baxter, who's now at Fairfield. And you have a new offensive coordinator in Tom Compitello. You have a new defensive coordinator in Ed Williams, although both are familiar with the program. That's a big switch for Yale. How do the players adjust to that? If you're Penn, how do you deal with the loss of players that seemingly were in Philadelphia forever? Junkin in the goal, Tyler Dunn in the midfield, and Simon Mathias on attack. This is a team that's right on the cusp of maybe taking the mantle away from Yale to be the next great team in the Ivy League. How do they adjust for those losses? Cornell, how do you use Jeff Teague? And a lot of people, they scratch their heads or they complain that Jeff Teague is only an honorable mention preseason All-American or a third team All-American preseason. Why isn't he first team? He's this for Canada. He's that for these guys. And, well, the bottom line is, a lot of times when he gets shut off, he allows himself to be shut off for Cornell. So how will Jeff Teague play this year? And is it going to be, and I'm not saying this is accurate or even fair, but think about Randy Moss. You know, he was an amazing NFL receiver, but after he stopped playing, or maybe even while he was playing, he admitted to taking plays off, not playing 110% all the time. So how does Jeff Teague's last year in Ithaca go? And then Princeton, Michael Sowers, probably one of the best players in the last decade, never to play in an NCAA tournament game, right? I don't think Princeton's ever made an NCAA tournament since Sowers has been there, correct? Do I have that right?
I think you're right.
You know, much like Tom Shriver with Princeton and how brilliant he was, you know, Michael Sowers is the next coming of that. That, you know, can Princeton put it together to make an Ivy League run and potentially get to the NCAA tournament so more people can watch Michael Sowers play? So that is kind of the Ivy League in a nutshell, what I'm looking for from there. And then, you know, the rest of it, I'm interested in what the roles are of transition midfielders and short stick defensive midfielders as relative to the shot clock. And I can tell you, Matt and I hit on it last week a little bit. Now that we're in year two and I was able to officiate some preseason scrimmages, now I got a game as a broadcaster under my belt, the shot clock is wonderful. It really is a tremendous addition to the game that only enhances our sport. And in year two, transition offense, how will that be incorporated into game plans? Teams that may not have wanted to run in the past might run a little bit more. Short-sighted defensive midfielders in that situation too, how much more important do they become? So in year two of the shot clock, I'm really interested to see some of the byproducts of having it in the game. So those would be my three.
It's a good list, Dix. I'm really excited for the season, really. And when's the next game you're doing? When will I see you on TV again?
So my next television game that I'm aware of is February 22nd. I believe it's a noontime start. Penn State hosting Yale.
Oh.
How about that?
That's going to be a great game.
The Nittany Lions hosting the Bulldogs on February 22nd. Yale's in action this weekend against Villanova, who Penn State beat a week ago. 19-10, and Penn State, the Nittany Lions play, I just had it in the top of my head, but now I forget who Penn State plays this weekend. Oh, they play St. Joe's, so a battle of Pennsylvania. So if if things go the way they should go, not that it matters 3-4 games into the season, but you could have two undefeated teams going after each other, and you have a Penn State team hosting a Yale ball club that handed the Nittany Lions their only two losses of 2009. So that'll be a great game.
It will be a great game. Well, there's going to be lots of great games this season, Dix, and we'll be talking about it all here, all season long on the D-Flying Dixie podcast. And we promise that the future Give and Go topics will be a little more lighthearted and a little more entertaining. So if you like what you heard, smash that like button, pass it on to a friend. Sharing is caring. In fact, this is Valentine's Day. Give the gift of D-Fly and Dixie to your loved ones. What else could they possibly
do? What could be better?
Yeah. If you want to leave a note for us, hit us up on Twitter. Mark is at Dixon Lacrosse, and I'm simply at D-Fly, D_Fly. Also, be sure to check out the other podcasts on Inside Lacrosse. There's a new one every day. Enjoy the games.